Welcome to the Noracast Tech Briefing. I'm your host.
And I'm your co-host. We've got a really fascinating lineup today, touching on both the hard infrastructure of the AI boom and the underlying economics driving it.
That's right. We're starting off in Paris, where Mistral just held their inaugural AI Now Summit. And the announcements coming out of that event signal a massive strategic pivot away from just building general consumer chatbots and toward full-stack industrial engineering.
They're clearly trying to carve out a very specific, highly lucrative niche in Europe. And after we break down Mistral's new strategy, we're going to dive into a philosophical piece that's been tearing up Hacker News, the dead economy theory.
It is a sobering look at the actual financial math behind the current AI investment cycle. And it asks a pretty dark question about what happens to the consumer base if these AI models actually succeed at their stated goals.
It's definitely one of the more compelling counter-narratives to the current hype cycle. Let's get right into it. So on May 28th, Mistral hosted the AI Now Summit at the Carousel du Louvre in Paris. They brought in over 1,400 industry leaders, and the tone of the event was a major departure from what we usually see from frontier AI labs.
Yeah, if you look at OpenAI or Anthropic events, it's usually very focused on AGI, consumer applications, and general reasoning. Mistral used this summit to introduce an integrated industrial AI stack. They are going after heavy enterprise.
And they have the launch customers to prove it. They announced partnerships with Airbus, the BMW Group, and ASML. Those are some of the most complex, engineering-heavy companies on the planet.
Exactly. And to support that kind of clientele, they announced a new product called Vibe. This is a unified agent platform for productivity and coding, and it's officially replacing their previous consumer-facing product, LeChat.
Retiring LeChat is a big signal. It says they aren't interested in fighting a price war over homework helpers or creative writing assistants. Vibe is positioned as an enterprise-grade agent.
But the most interesting part of this industrial pivot is how they are tackling the actual science of engineering. They announced the acquisition of Emmy AI, which is a startup based in Vienna.
Right, and Emmy AI specializes in physics-based modeling. That is a crucial detail. If you're Airbus or BMW, you can't have an AI hallucinate the tensile strength of an alloy or the aerodynamics of a wing component.
Right. Standard large language models are fundamentally probabilistic. They guess the next word. Physics-based modeling requires deterministic accuracy, grounded in natural laws. By acquiring Emmy AI, Mistral is trying to bridge that gap, giving their models the ability to interface with actual engineering simulations.
And to run all of this, they need serious compute. They announced a new 10-megawatt data center in Les Ulis, France, which is scheduled to open in the third quarter of 2026. What stood out to me is that this facility is specifically focused on inference.
10 megawatts dedicated primarily to inference is substantial. It shows they expect a massive volume of production traffic from these enterprise clients. But it also ties into their biggest selling point, data sovereignty.
Sovereignty is the key word here. For a company like ASML, which builds the machines that make advanced semiconductors, their intellectual property is their entire business. The idea of sending that IP to a server in California via an API is a non-starter.
Mistral is leaning heavily into this. They are offering on-premise deployments and guaranteeing that European data stays on European soil. They are positioning themselves not just as a tech vendor, but as a pillar of European strategic autonomy.
Do you think that's a sustainable competitive advantage, or is it a geopolitical crutch? Because if an American model is significantly smarter or cheaper, enterprise loyalty can evaporate pretty quickly.
I think in highly regulated sectors like defense, aerospace, and critical infrastructure, sovereignty isn't a crutch, it's a legal requirement. Mistral doesn't necessarily need to beat OpenAI on every general benchmark. They just need to be good enough while offering an ironclad guarantee on data security and local control.
And by integrating physics-based modeling and focusing on specific industrial workflows with Vibe, they are building a moat that goes beyond just the foundational model. They are becoming a full-stack enterprise partner.
It's a very pragmatic strategy. We'll have to see if they can execute on the infrastructure side when that Les Ulis data center comes online later this year. But right now, they are making a very compelling pitch to the European industrial base. Let's pivot from the business of AI to the macroeconomic implications of it. There is an essay by Owen McGran, published on May 30th, called The Dead Economy Theory, and it has completely taken over Hacker News with well over 1,000 upvotes. It's a fantastic, provocative piece. McGran takes the concept of the dead internet theory, the idea that the web is increasingly just machines talking to machines, and applies it to the real physical economy.
The core premise of the essay is based on a very simple financial observation. Right now, we are seeing hundreds of billions, potentially trillions of dollars being poured into AI infrastructure, data centers, power grids, silicon.
And McGran argues that to financially justify that level of capital expenditure, these AI companies have to deliver unprecedented returns. The only way to generate those returns is by achieving large-scale labor displacement.
Exactly. They have to replace human cost centers at a civilizational scale. But here is the paradox he points out. If you successfully automate away all those jobs to reduce corporate costs, you simultaneously destroy the consumer base.
Right. Workers are consumers. If a massive swath of the population loses their income to AI automation, who exactly is going to buy the goods and services that the AI is producing? You end up with a system where hyper-efficient machines are performing work for a market that has no purchasing power.
And McGran's conclusion is striking. He says if AI doesn't successfully replace human labor, the infrastructure investments are a bust. But if it does replace human labor without a fundamental restructuring of the economy, it collapses the consumer market. Therefore, he claims these AI companies might be the most overvalued assets in the history of capitalism.
It's the ultimate catch-22. We've heard variations of this argument for centuries, right? The Luddites worried about mechanized looms, and later people worried about software eating the world. Historically, technology has created new types of jobs to replace the old ones.
But the counter-argument, which McGran taps into, is that the speed and the cognitive scope of generative AI are fundamentally different. A loom replaces physical labor. An LLM replaces cognitive labor. If an AI can learn any new white-collar workflow faster than a human can retrain for it, the historical pattern breaks down.
And that brings up the discussion of systemic economic shifts. If the dead economy theory is even partially correct, it explains why so many tech billionaires are suddenly vocal advocates for universal basic income. Because UBI acts as a subsidy for their own consumer base. If the government redistributes wealth to the displaced workers, those workers can continue to buy the output of the AI-driven corporations.
Exactly. Without something like UBI or a heavy robot tax, the closed loop of capitalism breaks. You can't have a consumer economy without consumers. McGran's essay really forces you to look past the technical benchmarks of the models and ask what the actual endgame is for this level of automation.
It's a brilliant framing. Whether you believe we are heading for a structural collapse or just another painful period of labor transition, the essay highlights a massive blind spot in the current AI gold rush. The tech is advancing much faster than our macroeconomic theories can account for.
All right, let's hit a few more stories real quick before we wrap up.
Sounds good. Let's get into the roundup.
First up, a really interesting blog post from Obelisk, published on May 29th, arguing that for many developers, SQLite is all you need for durable workflows.
Durable execution is huge right now for AI agents and long-running tasks, allowing processes to survive crashes. Usually, people reach for heavy distributed systems like Temporal to manage this.
But Obelisk points out that you can just use an embedded SQLite database locally to journal the state. By pairing it with Lightstream, you can asynchronously stream those database changes to an S3-compatible storage bucket for backups.
It's a massive simplification of the architecture. They do caveat that if you need high availability or synchronous multi-node replication, you should still use Postgres. But for a lot of projects, this local-first approach is more than enough.
Next, over on GitHub, there's an interesting feature request for RTK, which is the Rust token killer. RTK is a CLI proxy that compresses terminal output by 60 to 90% to save on LLM token costs.
Right, and issue 2175 is asking for RTK grep to adopt the heading style output that native ripgrep uses by default when printing to a TTY. Instead of repeating the file name on every single matched line, it groups them under one header.
It highlights a really fun design tension in AI tooling. RTK wants to compress data for the machine, but developers expect the tools they wrap to behave familiarly. If the output format diverges too much, it causes parsing bugs and user frustration. Finally, a quick shout out to a great community resource that's been making the rounds, pandoctemplates.org.
Pandoc is the legendary universal document converter created by John McFarlane back in 2006. It's incredibly powerful for turning Markdown into PDFs or Word docs, but the default styling is pretty bare bones.
This site is a curated collection of custom templates and scripts for formatting manuscripts, academic papers, and letters. If you want professional-grade document output without having to learn the intricacies of LaTeX, this repository is a lifesaver. And that is going to wrap up today's briefing. A lot of shifting dynamics in the industry right now, from the data center floor all the way up to the macro economy. Thanks as always for listening.
We will be back tomorrow to break down the latest developments across the tech landscape.
Until then, take care.